Tested live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Well, as you know, South Africa is not an isolated economy. We've got peers across the globe, but more so peers on the continent. Just a moment ago, we spoke to the finance minister of Zimbabwe, talking about how the economy is positioning itself for increased trade. And now we're shifting gears to a country that I recently paid a visit to and was left pleasantly surprised. Namibia. Yep, many might refer to it as a desert land, but it has and holds a lot of opportunity, especially within the energy space, where oil exploration activity is certainly picking up. Beyond that, they're also looking at renewable energy sources, advancing their transition to a just environment and just transition. But more than that, also looking at agriculture and mining as key drivers of economic growth. So we thought it best that tonight, let's just get a better understanding of the continent we live in and the economic trades and partnership we have with our neighboring countries.
Our Africa on Kaya Biz.
Yep, time to take a look at our Africa. And joining me tonight, we have the MD of High Economic Intelligence and chairperson of the Namibia Statistics Agency, Salomo Hay. Such a pleasure to have you, Salomo, and welcome to the show.
Hi, good evening, Gugu. Good evening to your listeners, and thank you for having me.
Such a delight to have you with us, and thank you to you and your people, countrymen, for keeping me in good company last week. I actually attended the International Energy Conference, which really saw a significant amount of contribution to the economic success of Namibia. But maybe let's start there, just by understanding the economic standing of Namibia at the moment. How is it performing?
Yeah, look, Gugu, I think over the years, Namibia never had a growth problem. I think for the past 26 years, if you look at our average growth rate, it's around 4%, or just over 4%. I think just before COVID, the 2 to 3 years before COVID, we had very low to no growth. And then obviously was on the back of our mainstays, the mining activity in agriculture. But during that time, we had a huge drought, I think around 2018, 2019, which obviously impacted negatively on the growth prospects of the Namibian economy. Mining was not doing as well as it has done previously. We had a bit of a commodity prices that didn't go during that period, and then an impact on the Namibian economy. Then obviously, we had a few accelerated government programs or fiscal expansionary programs over the years. There was what we refer to as the mass housing, essentially to try and, one, obviously deal with the backlog in the housing sector, but also to try and build industry. When I say build industry, I mean, if you go into a $1 billion government program, you would want to see industries or sub-industries like window panes, for instance, being manufactured in Namibia, doors and that sort of thing. Fast forward to COVID, obviously we saw the biggest contractions we have ever seen since the turn of independence, 1990, which was a contraction of around just above 88%. Obviously, we then had the rebound effect, if it were 2022, where we grew quite well. And then things stabilized around 2023 again, where we grew a healthy between 4 and 5%. It was revised downwards recently. But then obviously, like I indicated earlier, that historically we never had a growth problem. The issue has always been that our growth, regrettably, has not been inclusive. Mm. When I say inclusive is that the majority of Namibians still remain out of the mainstream economy. We have challenges of unemployment, inequality and poverty. These are structural problems that we have. If you look at the structure of the Namibian economy from the 1980s to now, it has not changed to the extent that...
Yeah, contextualize that, especially when it comes to the contribution of various sectors, but also employment, which remains a challenge in the environment.
Yes. So what you have is that you've got a very small primary and secondary sector in relation to the tertiary sector. Ideally, what you want to see is you want to have a thriving primary sector, because through the primary sector is really where you want to make your raw materials work for you. So essentially, this is where mining is taking place. This is where the exploration or production of mining is taking place. This is where you have your agriculture and. So ideally, what you want is you want to make sure that this sector thrives. And once those sectors thrive, you will then move the products into the secondary sector. Now, the secondary sector essentially is where the manufacturing take place, and this is where the jobs would be created. But what we have is that the majority of the activities that take place within the primary sector are actually exported in its raw form to other destinations. So the secondary sector, where you would ideally then have wanted to create the jobs, is almost left dormant. And subsequently, then you've got this highly sophisticated financial sector or services sector that then become the tertiary sector. Obviously, we've got very close links to South Africa. For instance, if you look at our dual listing and what that contributes to the NSX, which is Namibia Stock Exchange, it tells you that the FNBs that are listed on the other side also have got a presence here. So the Standard Bank and the like. So that then makes the tertiary sector contribution, or rather the financial sector or the services sector contribution to the whole GDP much bigger. So this then obviously also speak to the demographics in terms of the skill set that you have and that you don't have. Historically, we had a very low skill set. I think our 2018 labor force speak to high concentration of high school in jobs or in the labor force. Ideally, you want to have highly sophisticated graduates being at the center of job creation, because through that you'll be able to create the knowledge-based economy that we want to have and competitive products.
And maybe if I can jump
Now,
in there on the kind of skills that are required, I'm keen to link this as well to sectors of the economy that are well positioned for growth. And energy certainly seems as though it is attractive and attracting a lot of foreign direct investment, but doesn't necessarily have the full scope and range of capabilities just yet to manage the flow of capital at the moment.
yes, I mean, look, we are projected to have reserves of around 10 billion to 11 billion barrel of light oil in terms of the current appraisals that we have. Obviously, that's an ongoing activity. I think we're also being projected to have around 2.2 trillion cubic feet of raw gas that's been found in the Orange Basin. Or rather in the south. So these are huge discoveries that are coming to our shores and could potentially change this, the very scope or the very face of the Namibian economy. But like you rightfully pointed out, are we ready to beneficiate? Are we ready to actually be part of these new sectors that are coming to us? Today there was a pilot test. You would be aware that the King of Belgium is currently in the country, and today we attended a pilot test down at the coast. Of a green hydrogen plant. So there's quite a lot happening. If you look at the policy environment, which essentially is what should link the locals to these industries, is there's a bit of a vacuum in the sense that we don't really have a local content policy. Now, the local content policy would then be able to do a matching, if it were, in terms of the skills. Right, to the extent that the value chain of oil, for instance, includes so many other subsectors. I mean, you speak about logistics, you speak about engineering, you speak about, you even speak about the spillover effects from processing of chemicals, which then essentially becomes fertilizers and ammonia, which can then lead to a thriving agri sector. But to what extent do we have the skills ready to participate fully in the economy? When I say the economy, I mean the oil and gas. And in the absence of a strong policy imperative, it leaves you open to a certain level of exploitation from these big multinationals that have been in the game for such a long time. So you need to have a government that's strong, you need to have policy certainty. You need to understand what level of procurement of this value chain is only reserved for locals. You need to have the infrastructure to be able to absorb and be on par with all of these discoveries. You would be aware that we've got one of the best roads on the continent, but we want to have our railway infrastructure be on par, because a lot of these commodities or activities will have to be moved on rail. Remember that we've got we just had expansions on our port terminal, which have increased activity. Obviously, we're competing here against your Cape Town and your Durban ports, but we've stood up quite well. I mean, and we've been very competitive in that respect. But the long and short of it is that you want to make sure that, one, the policy content is able to make sure it bring about the necessary certainty in terms of making sure, even when you do a skills audit in terms of where the need is for specific sectors, the policy would be able to address some of these issues. And what you don't want is, you don't want to leave this too far out, because the exploration and appraisals are running so much and with so much speed ahead, to the extent that by the time your local content policy needs to come in place, you would have lost the bargaining window and subsequently could then be fighting for scraps. So what you don't want essentially really is that you don't want to be left too far behind, because you, and remember that Google, this is not the first mineral that we are discovering. And on the previous ones, we have not covered ourselves in glory.
True.
So what you
Uranium.
Want to make sure,
mm-hmm.
yes. So what you want to make sure is that this is an opportunity where on the one side, obviously everyone speaks about this whole just transition thing. I don't know whether I agree with it. I think for me really is just energy additionality. But this means that you are bringing new energy onto the grid as opposed to moving away from fossil into alternative, if it were. So the two coexist in Namibia, and I think that we could really be a model for, on the one side, having this huge discovery of oil and being invited to become a member of OPEC, and on this side, you've got a huge interest from the West in terms of really wanting to see the green hydrogen and the alternative energy potential that exists. So we're in a very fortunate position. I don't think Namibia has ever been here before. The investor appetite is at an all-time high. The number of people that we are landing at Hosea Kutako, our international airport,
is... It's busy. It's a buzz. Ask me about it. There were even delays with the flights last week. But you know what I find encouraging about this? And I must say, we need to be louder about this messaging, because many South Africans are not even familiar with the economic prospects that exist in Namibia. Should this, should the policy, should the, you know, efficacy of the discoveries, you know, be accurately funded, supported, and an ecosystem be vibrant, this has the potential to change the construct of the Namibian economy, but also the SADC region and the continent from an energy point of view and vibrancy in terms of growth in these economies. And I think that's an important lesson that we need to impart, not only on South Africans who are listening here today, but even other members in our neighboring countries. What's the one takeaway we need to understand as ordinary citizens about the economic potential that could be untapped in Namibia's energy sector?
Well, I think that, you know, historically, the ties between Namibia and South Africa are very close. I think we are from the same umbilical cord, if it were. And so we run each other very close, South Africa historically having been the bigger brother. But I think there's a bit of a change in terms of the investor sentiment. And the big takeaway for you on the other side is that the small brother is growing and is going to grow very quickly. You need to keep an eye on them, because the opportunities that are opening up here are phenomenal. I mean, if you speak about the 10 billion, 11 billion barrel of oil, you must think about the subsectors that could come out of the oil value chain. And from an investment perspective, I think South Africans should really consider thinking about what Namibia has to offer. South Africa being the biggest industrialized country on the continent, and this is notwithstanding your power issues. I think you haven't had load shedding for a while now, which is good. I think
Yes.
there's a huge opportunity for investors to really move over or to start looking with keen interest across the Orange River. Remember that there's also other gas-to-power projects that are earmarked, and given the energy deficit in the region, we could become a net exporter
Yes.
of power in the near future. And I think from an investment perspective, South African investors should really not take lightly what's happening in Namibia, because the growth potential is phenomenal. If you also look at in terms of the regulatory framework, in terms of investor sentiments, what our central bank is doing, how they are protected in terms
Yes.
of the constitution and all of that, there's again some level of real safety for investors' monies, if it were. And you know that good FDI is usually hard to come by, but I think we've been able to attract that in large measure precisely because of our regulatory framework. So the takeaway is that Namibia offers huge potential with huge returns, and at the same time, where investor funds are safeguarded.
Definitely. Thank you so much for your time this evening, Mr. Hay. I am going to try my best in saying okuhepa. I hope I've said it correctly.
Oh, good being around. Thank you so much. Very kind of you. And
Thank
please
you.
do spread the message that Namibia is the world's best kept secret.
Oh, yes.
And we
Definitely.
hope
In more
we
ways
attract
than
more.
one, and we certainly hope to bring a lot more traffic, advent investment, and people just to discover more about our neighboring countries. A very important observation that we have there. Thank you so much, Salomo. Truly appreciate it, and look forward to touching base with you again soon, sir.
Thanks, Google, and thank you to your listeners.
Thank you. That's Salomo Hay, who is the MD of Economic Intelligence and Chairperson of the Namibia Statistics Agency, giving us some insight just to fully comprehend the growth opportunities that we see in our neighboring country, typically known as the desert land, which I must tell you is sitting ripe for a lot of investment. And the reason why we have these conversations, and they really tickle my brain cells, and you might be thinking, oh, Namibia so far. It's not really. Just a 2-hour flight, much like you do take to Cape Town. Similar thing with Bulawayo and Harare in Zimbabwe, even Botswana. And I think as South Africans, the more we get to interact with our global peers, the more we get to have continental-based conversations, the greater the economic opportunity, not only for our country, but for the region can be. And while South Africa does have the benefit of being the most industrialized country on the continent and within the SADC region, we've been the big brother. Yes, at times even carrying the opportunities and economic potential of our peers on our shoulders, but let's not get caught sleeping. There's a lot of fresh partnerships that we should be able to establish with our peers across the continent, even in Mozambique, where there too there have been oil finds, but of course, heightened level of exchange that can take place. So, if anything, as a South African, we need to travel more, we need to do more, we need to invest more, and just understand more about the opportunities that are present.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.